Hi, folks. Bob Main here, and welcome to another episode of today's Survival Show. Episode 133, to be exact. This is a practical show. I don't engage in any kind of tinfoil hat survival stuff. None of that. I just keep this rooted in common sense. And that's what I want to talk about today. Just some good common sense preparedness stuff. I have another interview coming up. This show is going to be about knife sharpening, hand tools, and blacksmithing. Three subjects I don't know a lot about. So therefore, I'm going to rely on somebody else. So a listener contacted me about a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, I know a lot about these three subjects. Can I come on your show? And of course, I jumped all over that. So, folks, this is a listener-based show. Every once in a while, it's just me talking, but this is mainly going to be somebody else, and I'll introduce my guest coming up shortly. But just a couple of announcements that I want to put out there before we get started. If you are relatively new to the show, as I mentioned, it's practical. We don't engage in a lot of tinfoil hat thinking here. I am just a Yankee with a microphone. I was born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. Now I live in the great state of Texas. And all of my life, folks, I was brought up with the preparedness mentality, starting when I was a little kid with my mom. And, you know, tragically, I lost my father. Lost my father when I was 13 years old, and my brothers were a lot younger. So guess what? I had to quickly grow up and help the family become much more self-sufficient. So thank God to my mom for instilling the preparedness and survival mentality into me at a young age. So if you're new, and I want to give a good shout out to all my international listeners out there. There are a lot of people from outside the United States listening to this show. Welcome. The other announcement I want to make is about the website itself, todayssurvival.com. I've added a few new resources. Check it out. It's a surprise. Just go ahead and check it out. www.todayssurvival.com. Also, don't forget about my CD and digital download. I'm going to quit selling version 1 about a day after this show is published. So hurry up and get your copy of version 1 because I'm probably not going to sell that for quite some time again. Version 2 is coming out shortly, and you're going to like what you hear on that. I got a preview coming up for you. If you make the investment, it's only $15. What you will get is some excellent preparedness and shooting information. I combine survival and a little bit on becoming proficient with a firearm. It's not all about guns. There's a lot of good preparedness ideas on there. I combine it all. I give you some ideas I've never covered on this show before and put it all into one package. Your investment will help the show, help support my efforts here and keep things going, keep the bills paid. And you're also going to help the Second Amendment Foundation continue to fight for our firearms rights. Now, version 2 is not going to hardly be on guns at all. There'll be a little bit of information in there, but the rest of it is going to be on just general preparedness stuff that I'm not covering on this show. And my guest coming up is going to do an extended segment on version number 2. Hopefully I'll have that released right around the 15th of this month. So if you want to quickly get a copy of version 1, go to the website, click the Buy Now button, or click the button up at the top that says TSS Combo Survival CD and Digital Download. 95% of the people are getting a digital download. I just send you some instructions so you can just download it from a special website and save it forever wherever you'd like to save it, iPod or whatever. The other announcement is the forum, today's Survival Show forum. Let me please invite you to join that. Like-minded people on there that want to share some good ideas with you. You know what? My old mentor, He kind of wore out this saying, but the more I thought about it, the more true I realized that it was. And it went like this. He said, small minds talk about things. Average minds talk about other people. Great minds talk about ideas and concepts for a better life. And that's what you find on our forum. You'll find the great minds on our forum that want to talk about ideas and concepts for a better life. From a preparedness, survival, common sense, though, you're not going to find a lot of the tinfoil hatters on our forum that are, you know, talking about all these crazy conspiracy theories and things like that. We just talk about how to help each other out and how to basically prepare for things that may come. So check it out. go to www.todayssurvival.com, click the forum button. It'll take you to where you need to go. And that's it. I don't want this show to get too commercial, so let's go ahead and dive right into it. There is not much I can tell you about this that is not going to be covered in this upcoming interview. Matt Chushnik is a listener to the forum. He's a fellow Texan. He's also a fellow cheesehead from Wisconsin. He's another Wisconsin transplant, but he is a blacksmith. He's an expert knife sharpener, and he's really good with hand tools. So when Matt got a hold of me a couple weeks ago, I obliged and I put him on the show. He's also on the forum, says he's going to get more participant in the forum, I guess. A little tongue-tied there. Sorry, I guess I meant to say he's going to become a better participant in the forum. Also, I guess he says he's downloaded every single one of my shows. So, hey, anybody that can put up with me for that many shows deserves a right to come on here and give you his ideas on the subjects coming up on knives, hand tools, and blacksmithing. Now, as you think about your preparedness goals, I just want to say, what kind of knives do you own? What kind of hand tools do you have? Do you know how to use them? Do you know how to make things with them? Do you know how to properly care for and sharpen your knives? And do you know how to blacksmith? You might get some ideas from this. So without any further ado, I'm going to go ahead and play about a 15-second sound effect. And on the other side of the real quick break, Matt Chushnik from the forum and a listener to this show will be on with me, and we did it by Skype not too long ago. So stay tuned. Okay, folks. Hey, I am joined by another listener to the show. I'm joined from the great state of Texas by Matt Chushnik. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great, Bob. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show. Let me thank you for that in advance.
Well, I got to say, Bob, thank you for doing the show.
Yeah,
it's a great show.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. You are in Austin, Texas.
That is correct. I'm in Austin, Texas, but like you, I'm a damn Yankee.
Yes.
I came down here from Wisconsin, actually. So,
not only are you a damn Yankee, but you're a fellow cheesehead.
Yes.
How about them Packers, huh?
Oh, hey, you know, I was sitting here at home and watching the game and going, come on, come on, because nobody would give me tickets. I didn't understand this. You know, I'm just down the road in Austin. I could drive there.
Well, guess what? I only live about 36 miles from the stadium, and I couldn't get tickets either. I had to painfully watch it on TV.
Oh, yeah, I can understand that.
But, everybody listening to this, probably don't want us to hear us just drone on and on about the Packers. But I have to brag, you know, because I don't get these bragging rights very often.
Oh, yeah, no, I fully understand. I've lived here in Texas and in Minnesota, and whenever the Packers do well, I got to brag at least a little bit.
Minnesota. Oh, boy, don't get me started on the Vikings. All right, I'll leave that one alone. Let's get down to business here. You wanted to come on the show to talk about blacksmithing and knife and tool sharpening, and I think this is fantastic. You know, these are two subjects I don't know a lot about, so I'm going to lean on you a lot in this interview. Is that okay?
That's fine. You know, they are related topics, and, mm-hmm. you know, in that mix, I'd kind of like to talk about using hand tools as well. I mean, in today's society, everybody's got the power drill, and they've, you know, got all of these, you know, great electronic gadgets. But to truly understand how to use them, you got to go back to the basics and do it by hand first.
Boy, isn't that the truth? I'm glad you brought that up. You know, it's like that with almost anything. You have to go back to the basics. We tend to get so fancy these days, and we forget about the basics. So what do you want to start with? Do you want to start with talking about hand tools or the blacksmithing trade?
Well, I guess we can talk with the blacksmithing trade. I mean, there's not a lot of trade out there as far as it goes anymore. Most of it's decorative and artistic. But what I got interested and bitten by it at about 3 years old. My grandparents,
wow.
Yeah, my grandparents took me down to a place in Kansas called, it's a historic reenactment place. I don't even know if it's still around anymore because that was far too many years ago, 30 plus years ago.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that. It was a historical reenactment of the old Dodge City.
Cool.
And they had a blacksmith out there. And there is nothing more fascinating than watching someone heat up some metal, pull it out of the fire, and bang on it with a hammer.
Yeah, that would be cool. Especially if your young people probably like to watch that too.
Oh, I'll tell you, I've been out there. I forge. I do some public demos out at there's a park near my house, a big park here in Austin, Zilker Park. And in the botanical garden, they have an old blacksmith shop. And that shop was restored by the group that I'm part of, which is Balcones Forge, which is just an amateur blacksmith group.
Nice.
And so they got it back up to working condition. And the parks people said, hey, you know, we'll let you come in and work in it. And so they provide us with the coal, we provide the steel stock, and then basically I'm in charge of that facility for the group. And so whenever I want to go out there, I just tell them I want to open up the shop, and I head down. As a matter of fact, I'll be down there next Tuesday and Thursday.
That's neat. Cool. Well, okay, so that's kind of what you're doing with blacksmithing, and we talked earlier. I guess you've got a big order you're working on, huh?
Yeah, we hadn't been, because it's a city park and stuff, they don't allow us to sell right out of the forge area. But we do get a lot of people asking about it and stuff, and so, you know, I hand out some business cards now and then and don't hear back from people, you know. But somebody suggested while we were out there one day that, you know, asked if we sold to the gift shop there in the park. And I was like, gee, no. And I thought about it a little bit more and said, gee, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. Well, and you know, since we're talking survival preparations, let me compliment you. You know, you have found a way, you found an avenue to take one of your skills and make money with it. And I think that's great. You know, that's a prep. You know, I've talked about that on this show before. I've said, hey, find out what your talents are, figure out a way to capitalize on them, have various sources of income, and plus it's probably a good sense of enjoyment for you too, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's as far as the prep aspect of it goes, definitely is a prep type thing. It's a little extra income where I can use it. And you know, as I've been, you know, I got laid off about 2 years ago from what I did, and I've been looking for a job since then, and not been easy to come by. I was in a very specialized field. I did some blueprinting and stuff, and it's, you know, I'm not a draftsman, and I'm not really a computer geek, and I fall into this real gray middle area. So it's like I'm overqualified for a lot of jobs and not quite qualified enough for some of the other jobs.
Yeah, I can understand that.
So, you know, what I started doing is with the blacksmithing and stuff is I've just started kind of teaching myself how to do these things. And some of it's been, you know, just repair something or make a new tool or do something. You know, the blacksmith in the old days up through about the late 1800s, early 1900s was considered the king of all trades. He was one of the highest paid people in town, and he was the place that everybody went to.
Yeah, you know, he was one of the most important people in town, wasn't he?
If you had a blacksmith in town, you had a big town.
Yeah, you were on the map if you had a blacksmith in town.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, these guys were, you know, they did everything from household repairs. You know, you'd come in with, you know, a broken pot or a pan and they would fix it, to, you know, you needed a knife for something, they would make the knife, and, you know, I'm not saying these guys were high quality. We've got much better stuff than they do, you know, nowadays than they had back then. But they knew how to do it, and everybody came to them because everybody needed to use them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you brought up knives. We're going to talk about knife and tool sharpening. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I have been wanting to do a show for a long time on knife and tool sharpening. And a lot of people have been asking me about it. And I'm glad you're on here, because, you know, I consider you an authority on doing that.
Well, I have been doing it for probably about 20 years for myself. And then I've been doing it, probably the last three to 5 years as kind of a little side income for friends and family and stuff, and helping people out.
Well, I can guarantee you my next trip through Austin, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, I got a couple of blades I'm gonna leave with you and let you work your magic on them. How's that?
Hey, that sounds great to me, Bob. You know, and like I always say, you know, my wife and I, we both like old-time craft things and stuff. She knits and crochets and stuff, but, you know, we also believe very strongly in the barter system.
So, yes, so do I.
You know, so we'll talk and work something out.
We'll talk and we'll do a bartering arrangement, I guarantee you.
Hey, that sounds good to me. I mean, I've been interested in getting my hands on that CD of yours, and the money just hasn't been there right now, so...
Ah, well, you just gave me an idea. As a matter of fact, I'm producing version 2, but we can work out something on version 1. Not a problem.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, we'll work that out. Cool. Well, then let's talk about hand tools. You know, I'm a big proponent of hand tools because, you know, in a preparedness survival situation, if you don't have access to power, you definitely need to know how to use hand tools. You need to know how to make them. Make stuff with hand tools. So tell me, what are your thoughts and ideas for preppers on the hand tool subject?
I think you need to have a really good basic toolkit. And, you know, there's a lot of argument as to what can go in the toolkit, but I think probably the most important tools are, you know, having a good hammer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good claw hammer is probably going to do 90% of what you want, and something in the 16-ounce range. So, you know, about a pound. You don't want to go too light, because if you got to pound something in heavy that's a little heavier, it gets very, very difficult. But conversely, you don't want to get the 2-pound hammer that's specifically made for, you know, whatever. And, you know, like roofing and stuff, some of them are heavier hammers, and you don't want to get this thing, because if you're trying to pound a nail into the wall, maintaining that control gets too difficult.
Yeah, that was going to say 2 pounds might be a little bit hard to control.
Yeah, so I usually suggest about a 1-pound hammer, and definitely just a claw hammer of any type. You know, I have a preference for wood handles, but that's me. You know, I mean, metal handles, fiberglass handles, all of them work pretty much the same, but buy the best quality that you can.
I would think a fiberglass handle would be a lot lighter to carry in a bug out bag and something like that, correct?
Yeah, they are a lot lighter, and they're very, very nice. You know, you're talking about bug out bags. You know, if you're going to bug out with them, and again, that's something, you know, like you, I don't advocate bugging out. I bug in.
I bug in too.
I got enough stuff in my house with between books and videos and other things and games and stuff that we don't really need to go anywhere for about a month, and we'll be fine.
That's good.
The only problem we'd have is probably a food issue after about 2.5-3 weeks.
Yeah, well, you know, food is something that all preppers struggle with, and seems like you never have enough of it stored, and then when you do have enough of it stored, you know, something may happen, and even if it's not a major disaster, you still might have to dig into your food storage a little bit.
Yeah, yep. But, you know, good 16-ounce claw hammer, and then an adjustable wrench. Just a standard, you know, the old crescent wrench or C-wrench, And the reason I say adjustable wrench rather than like a box wrench or an open-end wrench is because you don't have to worry about what size the nut
right.
you're trying to work on is.
That's correct.
You know, it fits metric, it fits SAE, you know, so it does them all. Then I go with a pair of pliers, just a pair of standard slip joint pliers. And I would go with a basic cross-cut saw.
Okay.
And, you know, Stanley makes a nice little one. They call a toolbox saw. And they fit real nice in the toolbox. It's probably got a blade on it that's maybe 12 to 15 inches long. It's a nice, small, compact saw.
It's a Stanley what?
It's a Stanley, and I think they're called Shortcuts.
Stanley Shortcuts, okay.
It's a Stanley Shortcut cross-cut saw.
I'm writing this down because that's something I need to get one of those. You know, so far, everything you've mentioned, except for this saw, is in my vehicle emergency kit, actually. I got the pliers, I got the crescent wrench, I don't think I have a 1-pound hammer, I think I have a smaller hammer than that, but I don't have my saw, and I don't know if that's something, I might carry that in a vehicle emergency bag, but it's definitely something I need to have here at home.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something, I never would have thought of carrying a saw. If you're going to put a saw in your vehicle, make it a pruning saw. They make some nice fold-up pruners. Because, and I never would have thought of this, but I was reading an article, probably in Tactical Knife Magazine, and this guy got stuck on some ice, and he actually had a machete in the car. So I mean, you know, if you're gonna put a saw in, put a pruning saw, but otherwise put like a machete or something like that, a bigger knife, in the back end of the back of the car, so that you can whack off a couple little branches if you ever get stuck. He was trying to go up an entrance ramp on a freeway, got stuck on ice, was able to get out there, take some pine branches off real easy with his machete, slid them under his car tires, and gave himself the traction.
Cool.
And he was able to get himself going. And ever since that point, if I do a long car trip, I've got a big Kukri, which is a knife from India and Nepal that's got this big, nasty-looking curved blade.
I love those Kukris. I love them.
I got a nice cold steel one that I picked up as a second from them for, you know, way too cheap. And I just toss that in the back. I've got a Honda CR-V, and there's a little spot. It's an older one, and there's a little spot in there where you can, in the hatch door panel that you can actually seal it up in and nobody can see it.
Yeah, you know, you can find good deals on those cold steel Kukris everywhere. For people who are listening that don't know what that is, I'm going to go ahead and put a link to the Kukri in the show notes.
Yeah, it's a neat looking blade. It's a great blade for, you know, I find it a really nice blade for bushwhacking.
Yeah. How do you sharpen that thing? Since you're a knife sharpener guy, how do you sharpen that?
It's almost like sharpening a standard knife. The difficulty is when you get to those curves. And for that, what you use is like a round crock stick, a round ceramic sharpener. Yeah, using knife guy lingo, you know, crock stick, and people don't understand what that is, but you know, a good ceramic sharpener that's got a round profile and not. You can get some really giant ones, but usually you want one that's probably a quarter to 3/8 of an inch in diameter.
Okay.
And you just the key to sharpening things, and this is knives and tools, anything, is proper angle.
Okay, talk about that.
And well, it's one of those things, is, you know, there's books, there's probably at least a half a dozen really to a dozen really great books on sharpening. And, you know, but after reading them, what I've discovered, and after working with people and talking with people and doing things, I've discovered the key to doing any of the sharpening. It's really in learning what the angle is on the, excuse me, on the blade.
How do you do that? How do you learn what it is?
Well, you most knives, and I'm going to use knives because they're really a lot easier to explain, and most people have access to them real readily. Mm-hmm. But most knives have anywhere from a 17 to a 20 degree angle on them on the blade for sharpening.
17 to 20 degrees, okay.
Yeah. And you can do this a couple of ways. People like Lansky and Smith's, who are two knife sharpening companies, they manufacture sharpeners, and they put out these V sharpeners, and the sticks go into a wood base, and they're set at a specific angle, 20 degrees or 17 degrees or 25, depending on what you're working with. And all you do is you hold that knife on a 90 degree vertical and just draw it down, those mm-hmm. V sharpeners. I keep one of those in my kitchen. I don't waste my time with a knife steel, with a sharpening steel. Quite frankly, it's easier to dull a blade with a steel than it is to sharpen it.
So you just keep a V sharpener?
I just keep one of those V sharpeners right out in the kitchen. I think my blade needs a little hit. I just mm-hmm. whack it through there, because it would take me as long to get out a steel and do the same thing.
Is your V sharpener at a certain fixed angle, or do you adjust the angle, or what?
No, it actually when you insert the sharpening sticks, the ceramic rods, mm-hmm. into a wooden base, and that wooden base is set up at usually when you buy them, it's about a 20 degree angle.
Okay.
And so when you're pulling that knife straight, when you're keeping that knife at a 90 degree to the base, mm-hmm. and you're riding it, pulling it back towards you down that stick, you're creating a 20 degree angle.
Okay.
On your blade. And the other way to do it is, I also like using just a good old fashioned stone. Arkansas
sure.
stone or a Japanese water stone, and I probably recommend for most people, if you're on a budget, get just a standard Arkansas whetstone, and they'll do the trick just mm-hmm. perfectly. And don't oil them. If you're gonna put something on them to help float the metal chips off of it and the metal filings off of it, use water.
Okay.
And the reason I say this, and people may disagree with me, but the reason I say it is, if you're doing kitchen knives, the worst thing in the world is to be tasting machine oil.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I've that's happened to me.
you start cutting, even if you wash it off, if you don't get it quite good enough, You wind up with a little bit of that machine oil residue on your knife, and you do it, and it's just, oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
So you use them with water. You can use, the nice thing about like the Arkansas stones is you can use them with oil or water. But if you've already used it with oil, you've got to stick with oil.
Mm-hmm.
If you've used it with water, you got to stick with water.
You got to stick with water, yeah. Matt, let me get your opinion on this. Since Kukri, we're going to get back to knife sharpening here in a minute.
Sure.
But we've been talking here, I've been searching the internet a little bit on Kukris, and there's a wide range of them. There's one place called KnifeCenter.com. They've got some cold steel Kukris. Let's see here. It's a Magnum Kukri 17-inch machete carbon steel for under $20.
Yeah. Yeah, Cold Steel has been doing a lot of great stuff recently with the kind of the Kukri design. They've actually incorporated them into their machete. What mine is, it's an older model, and it was a designed more as a kind of a heavy duty, almost a combat knife.
Mm-hmm. Is it 13-inch or 17-inch?
I haven't had it out in a little while, and we've been doing a little cleanup around here, and it's kind of piled behind some stuff, so I'm thinking it's only about a 13-inch blade on that, maybe 15-inch.
Yeah. Because I'm seeing on KnifeCenter.com here, I'm seeing 13-inch blades and 17-inch all in kukri style. And there's some by Cold Steel. There's one that just says an Indian kukri, 12-inch, which is kind of cool.
Yep.
So they all come in different sizes. That's good. All right, sorry to get off track, but so back to knife sharpening. So don't use oil, use water.
Yeah, that's my recommendation, and I'm actually stealing it from another friend of mine who's a spoon carver out of England, and he uses all his on a Japanese water stone. But he's like, you know, I've used Arkansas stones and stuff, and he's like, but I only use them with water. I don't like using the oil because I can't stand the taste of the oil. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it, and I was like, boy, that is a really good idea. Now, if you're going to store your stuff, if you've got knives and, you know, you've sharpened them up and, you know, maybe it's a hunting knife or it's, you know, some other, you know, kind of knife that you're just not going to use all that often, but you just put a nice edge on it. If it's a sheath knife, take it out of the sheath, first and foremost.
To store it?
To store it. Take it out of the sheath. The sheath will collect water, can collect moisture in it, and you can start to rust your blade. Even stainless steel rusts. And it's one of those hazards that you get. And if you store it too long in the sheath and it starts to rust and corrode, you can actually have your knife sticking in your sheath when you need it the most.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I have a real nice K-Bar, Becker Companion, that I got. I think it's like a 10-inch blade or something like that, fixed blade knife. And it's all black, and I've got it inside of a Kydex sheath, and it's sitting inside of my gun safe. Should I still take it out of that sheath?
I would take it out of the sheath. Okay. And depending on how long you're going to store it, I mean, if you're going to store it for, you know, if it's going to be in there months at a time before you take it out of the sheath. If it's just going to be in there for like a week or something like that, you know, if you're going to have it, you're going to go out camping, you can put it right, you know, and it's like you come back, you go to work, and you're going out camping again the next weekend, just leave it in the sheath. It really isn't going to hurt it. But for a long-term storage, like a month or so or more, it's best to take it out of the sheath and let the air circulate around it.
Even sitting in my gun safe, huh?
It'll keep it dry because, well, even with the Kydex and everything else, moisture can get trapped up in there.
Okay.
And if that moisture gets in there, it's laying right on that blade. And now you've probably got, you know, it's probably powder coated and stuff. So it's going to be real rust resistant.
Right.
You know, it's probably powder coated. It's probably powder coated stainless and all these great things that modern knives are, and you know it's not going to rust immediately,
right?
But there's always that chance it's going to get there, and you're going to start to get some corrosion or discoloration, and nothing. I'm sorry, but nothing sucks more than pulling out a good sheath knife, and suddenly you see this big stain on it.
No, you're right, and good advice. So as soon as we finish up with this call, I'm going to go take that thing out of the sheath It's sitting in my safe, so I don't think it really needs to be inside the sheath anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that's the thing. You know, it's like keep them safe. I mean, if the safest way, if you got little kids and stuff, is to store them in the sheath, But then what I would recommend, if you're going to store it in the sheath, go out to your kitchen, pour a little bit of our favorite oil that everybody has in their kitchen, olive oil. And a really, really thin film of olive oil.
Okay.
And wipe it on. Just take a little bit onto a paper towel and just wipe on a nice thin coat onto the knife. Olive oil is really not going to stain it. And if it's food grade, you don't really have to worry about it going rancid all that easily if it's a real thin coat. And you know what? If you use this knife for food, it tastes like olive oil.
Yeah, instead of tasting like nasty oil, it tastes like olive oil. There you go.
Exactly. It's got a little olive oil. So, and, you know, people go, well, that's just bizarre. You can't do that. And, you know, I have to tell them, oil really, you know, petroleum oil that we use now, like these light machine oils and stuff, really didn't come into existence in like the 5th century, and yet they were telling people in the 5th century to oil their weapons and to oil things. What did they use?
Yeah.
Well, the Greeks and the Romans had a ton of olive oil. They used olive oil for lubricating things. You know, if they had a mechanical part that needed lubrication, oh, get the olive oil, pour a little on it.
And it's all natural.
And it's all natural, and, you know, it's not going to hurt anything. And so
cool. That's a great idea. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, that's one of my favorite tips. I get people asking all the time, you know, it's like, and now if you've got a heavy carbon steel knife, because there's a difference between a carbon steel and a stainless steel blade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 90% of the knives you buy nowadays are stainless. And they're wonderful and they're beautiful. And I do something that makes almost every knife person cringe. But with all my stainless knives, because I sharpen them,
mm-hmm.
I toss them in the dishwasher.
Quite frankly,
it's not going to dull the knife that much. And because I do sharpen it, I keep an eye on when my edge is getting dull, and I'll just tap it a little bit when I need to. But I throw them in the dishwasher to wash them. Now, I do have a couple of carbon steel blades. Can't do that. They will rust out the minute that water touches them. So what I do with them is I'll hand wash them, dry them off real good. But if they're going to be sitting around for a long while, I do the same trick. I put a little bit of olive oil on them, on the edges. And it keeps them sealed up so that I know there's no moisture getting to them. And so when I come back to them, if there's even a little bit of discolor, if it's a, you know, that discoloration you get sometimes when you touch a carbon steel blade because our hand oils get on it and stuff,
mm-hmm.
that's there. That's a natural patina, but you're not getting that rust.
Interesting. All right.
So,
another interesting tip.
Yeah, I mean, now, if you don't sharpen your own blades and you do send them out to somebody else, by all means, wash them by hand. It keeps them sharp that much longer. But, you know, a stainless steel knife can go in the dishwasher. It's not going to hurt it. You know, they eventually will rust, but you got to really stick them in a bucket of water for a few days and let them soak it in.
And I bet a lot of knife people advise against that, don't they?
Most knife guys will advise against washing them in the dishwasher. And part of it legitimately is that a sharpened knife can start to bounce around in the dishwasher just a little bit, and you can dull the edge.
Okay.
And that is a somewhat legitimate beef with doing it that way. I lay mine on the sides, so that the flat of the blade is down and that the back is against the wire rack and there's enough open space in the front that it's really not going to ding up that blade.
What if you washed it by itself? Then it wouldn't ding up much, would it?
Yeah. Well, if you wash it by hand, you know, it's like I only wash them by hand if I really, you know, I've got a family of four here. So when mm-hmm. we cook.
Yeah.
my wife is a big cook, so, you know, she loves to cook. And quite frankly, the cleanup afterwards, I'm going for easy.
Of course, yeah.
You know, and so it goes into the dishwasher and gets taken care of that way. And like I said, I sharpen it, so if it gets dull, I go back and I put the edge back on it.
Yeah. Well, good tips on knife sharpening. Can I ask you to get back to some of the hand tools again?
Sure.
I know we're kind of bouncing around a lot here, Matt, but...
That's fine. We can, you know, I just was thinking about that too. Let's see. So we just went over saws, and that's how we got off on the knives.
Mm-hmm.
But what we want to do is also, my opinion on this is, get a pair of channel lock pliers.
Okay. Why?
And probably 8 to 10 inch channel, probably about 10 inch channel locks. And the reason is because they are so useful for all sorts of things. I've used them. I live in an apartment, and the maintenance mm-hmm. guys run around with small channel locks all over the place. They do all their plumbing work with small channel lock pliers.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got like an 8 or a 10 inch pair, and those will work not only for doing the small little nuts on plumbing jobs, but you can go down and actually take off like your drain pipes and stuff, the inch and a half, inch and a quarter drain pipes, and you can remove those big nuts and clean out clogged drains and things.
Yeah. And what size did you recommend, 10-inch?
I said 8 to 10-inch.
8 to 10-inch, okay.
Yeah, and again, with all of this stuff, I recommend, and it's my standard recommendation, is buy the best quality you can. Nothing is worse than going out and spending, and, you know, it's like I'm all for being frugal and looking at things and trying to get a good deal on something.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing is worse than going out and buying a pair of pliers or a screwdriver, you know, and having it break on you because you spent $1.35 at you know, Harbor Freight or, you know, Walgreens or something, and you got the cheap tool kit. And you know, everything is poorly made, you know, import from somewhere and stuff. I mean, and I would start, you know, throwing out all the horrible things, don't buy the Chinese stuff, but a lot of stuff is made in China, and a lot of it is really good quality.
Oh, yeah, there are some good things made in China. You know, and Matt, I'm glad you're talking about this, because quality is so important. You know, from a survival preparedness standpoint, you know, we're talking about stuff that's either going to save your life or make your life a lot easier, not only today, but if some kind of a disaster occurs. And why do you want to skimp on quality? You know, I mean, yes, budgeting and financial responsibility is, in my opinion, one of the most important preps. But I think what you're trying to say here is save up and get good tools, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Whenever I go out and I buy a tool, matter of fact, I just bought some stuff for blacksmithing. I saved up and looked at it and said, okay, I want that, you know, and mm-hmm. I set my goal and I had specific, you know, goals or specific needs to be met with some of these tools. And so I knew, you know, and the thing is with any tool, you can spend anywhere from $5 to $500.
Oh, sure.
And the $500 tool isn't necessarily any better than the $5 tool. I hear all the time people going, oh, well, I got a Craftsman, you know, set of tools. And it's like, well, that's nice, you know. And,
yeah.
And, you know, but I also know they overspent. I mean, I can go buy a handpick and spend the same amount of money and come home with twice as many tools because I'm looking for quality.
And you know what you're doing, too.
Well, yeah, I did work in hardware for a couple years there, and I've used tools for, gosh, since high school. I mean, I've carried a knife every day since high school. I've carried, you know, and I've used tools ever since, you know, every day pretty much since high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I went to a suburban high school in Wisconsin, just outside of Milwaukee. And they had a big theater program, and those, I worked on the technical end of it, so I've used everything from chop saws to table saws to radial arm saws to screwdrivers to ratchet screwdrivers and all of that stuff in between. And that's where I got most of my training. And I've got to say, doing it by hand, and the big thing that I have to advocate is do it by hand first, because it helps you learn the feel. You talk mm-hmm. about your 1,000-round trigger jobs on yeah. your other podcast. And what I like to say is do 100, drive in 100 screws with a hand screwdriver. Don't do it all at once. You know, you'll kill yourself. But drive in 100 screws with just an old-fashioned manual screwdriver. And you start to feel how that screw behaves in the wood, how you get soft spots in wood, and how you get different spots, and you know how to compensate.
And then that carries over when you end up using power tools.
Exactly.
It carries over into making you more effective with those, doesn't it?
Exactly. I mean, if I have to advise anybody in sharpening anything, you know, sharpening is one of those things where it's like, oh, I hear people all the time go, oh, I'll just go out to the bench grinder and do that. Or I've got this set up with a blade, slack belt sander. I can put an edge on that in no time at all. And, yeah, you can. But if you don't understand how that metal behaves at a low speed,
right,
it can do stuff at a high speed and you won't notice. And suddenly you wind up with a knife that you've let get too hot mm-hmm. and you've lost all your temper. And so now your knife is useless. It won't hold an edge for forever, you know, or until you can get somebody to retemper it. And, you know, or you can take, you know, and you can wind up taking off too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's like knife sharpening is not about removing huge amounts of metal. If you sharpen a knife, you should be able to sharpen a knife and take off just the smallest amounts of metal.
Well, and that's what I'm afraid of when I try to do it on my own. You know, knives that I value a lot, I like to try to get professional people like you to do them, because I'm hoping that the professional people like you won't take too much metal off.
Oh, yeah. No, it's always a big hazard. You know, you get some guys out there that or some people out there just and these are people that think they know what they're doing. You know, it's not somebody, you know, I'm not trying to say, you know, but they get that power tool or they go buy that, you know, sharpener, and it's an electric sharpener, and they do it and then they don't know how to tell. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the other thing is, how do you tell when a knife is sharp?
Yeah, how do you? Why don't you elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, I can tell you there's every rule in the book. Probably one of the best ways, and one that I use all the time, is I take that knife, I hold it blade up, and I take my thumb very lightly and run it across the blade at a 90-degree angle to that sharp edge.
Mm-hmm.
It should catch, and this is where the light touch comes in, it should catch your fingerprints. If it catches your fingerprints, it's sharp.
Wait, say that again. Okay, you hold the knife with the knife blade sticking straight up.
Hold it blade up, so facing towards you.
Okay.
Take your thumb and pull it across at a 90-degree angle. Don't run it straight down the blade. Because if it is sharp, you're going to cut yourself that way.
Exactly.
But if you take it across and you just take your thumb very gently across, it should catch on your fingerprints.
Okay, I got
so
you.
It's
yes.
the lightest of touches. It'll catch on the ridges of your fingerprints. And if it catches, it's sharp. If it doesn't catch, it's dull.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say catching, you should feel some resistance when you
yeah.
gently pull your thumb across that
yeah,
blade.
It should be like, you know, those 3D goofy 3D little cards or little eyeballs that you get on toys and stuff, and you move them. It should be like scraping your finger across one of those.
Well, what about cutting paper? Is that a test?
Cutting paper is a great test, and you can do that, you know, and that's really going to tell you exactly how sharp it is. And free hanging paper is the best. So you take the paper and you grip it between your thumb and your forefinger. And then you take your knife and at about a 10 degree angle, you try to cut into paper while it free hangs. There are 100 or more great demos of people cutting free hanging paper on the internet.
Oh, on YouTube, there's probably a lot.
YouTube, Blade Forums has it. You know, they've all these places have videos on how to cut paper using a sharp knife and how to do a free hanging cut, and that will really tell you if you've got a superiorly sharp knife. Now, you get people who say, "Oh, well, you know, my knives are razor sharp," you know, and that's great. If you like your knives razor sharp, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't razor sharpen my knives. I don't razor sharpen anybody's knives, you know, when I do it.
Why not?
It's not a razor.
That's true. It's not to be used as one either, is it?
Well, you shouldn't. I mean, when I sharpen a knife, yes. One of my tests is, will it easily cut my arm hair? And I admit that's kind of a macho thing, but
yeah, it is.
it's kind of a silly macho thing, but I'll see if it pretty easily cuts the arm hair, and that tells me it's good and sharp and it's going to do the job that it needs to. You know, but I don't do them razor sharp where you can sharpen it, because what you're doing there is, There's a couple things that can go wrong with that. Is you can sharpen it too much.
Yeah.
And you wind up with what's called a wire edge, which is oh so sharp. And it's so much fun to play with up until the point that you bend it over.
That you do what?
You bend it over. It's like having thin, it's a very, very thin piece of metal. And what happens is you can do about three cuts with it. And then it starts to fold over on itself. It's like taking a piece of aluminum foil and it just crinkles over on its edge. And then you have a dull knife.
Ah, I see. Okay.
As a matter of fact, I just had somebody who had me do some sharpening. He had taken these things to a professional other than myself, and the guy had put a wire edge on all of his knives, and he was trying, and this guy knew how to steal a knife and was able to get and maintain the edge, but every time he'd use it, he'd bend it over, and so it would be super dull again, and then he'd swipe it a couple times on the steel, and he was able to straighten that edge back out.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he couldn't figure out, and he had to use a much wider angle than he was used to. He was like, I can't seem to get it at the angle that should be correct. But if I do it at this wider angle, it works. I took him home, and I took a look at him, and I was like, oh, I see what happened. The person where he had taken them to had sharpened them real quick. They had a machine, and they ran it through. And I don't know if this person was as skilled with it as they should have been, but they had the machine. They did it. They brought them out. They were sharp, but they still had that wire edge on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it almost immediately dulls, and You're stuck with this going, but I just had them sharpened. I'm doing something wrong, or geez, these knives are cheap pieces of junk, or or they're expensive pieces of junk. you know, that's when you get to, you know, because I don't know if you've looked at kitchen knives recently, but you can spend anywhere from about $5 to almost $1,000 on a kitchen knife.
Yeah, $1,000. Wow.
Yeah, they're
$1,000.
Yeah.
So and, what would be so special about a kitchen knife that costs $1,000?
You know, after looking at them, beats me.
Yeah, why should somebody spend that much money on a kitchen knife?
You really, I mean, if you can and you can find a really good one, by all means, go for it. But the $1,000, those are usually on the bigger, like the Vostoffs and stuff, and the Henkels, and the high end knives are very expensive. And partially it's manufacturing. They're German made knives. They're really, really well manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have a Vostoff that we got as a wedding present, my wife and mm-hmm. I got a Vostoff 8-inch chef's knife. I love that thing up, down, and sideways, but I know how much that cost. And personally, I would never spend that much.
How much does it cost?
At the time when a friend of ours got it, it was a couple $100.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's, I think, in the $500 to $800 range.
Oof, man. Oh.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful knife. It's well balanced.
Sure it is.
Well made. But, you know, there's a certain point where I go, yeah, I can buy something. I mean, I actually bought a set of butcher block knives for about $20.
Yeah.
And it was the whole butcher block. And I pulled them out in the store and I made sure of them before I bought them. And they work just as well.
Well, you know, my question is that $500 kitchen knife 10 times better than a $50 kitchen knife?
Okay. Well, now it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
And there's not an easy way to answer it, because I can say yes and no. It can be that much better.
Okay. It can be 10 times better, huh?
Yeah. It really can be. And it's the manufacturing tolerances. You can buy a $50 knife, and you can buy, you know, a knife that you, when you use it, it's not balanced right. It feels, you know, you pick it up, you're working with it in your hand, and it feels too heavy to the tip. It feels too heavy to the handle, and it just, it's a chore. It doesn't hold an edge the way you want it. And, you know, and I've bought some good knives that, you know, some, you know, I bought one, I've got a knife in the drawer that we probably spent about $20 on, because it, you know, had a nice ergonomic handle and stuff. And my wife's had carpal tunnel and surgery and stuff. And so we got that for her. And she really liked it, and I've tried to put an edge on that thing, and they did something with the steel, and this thing just doesn't like to take an edge, and when it finally takes an edge, it doesn't like to hold it very long.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so to my mind, that's like $20-$30 down the drain. Now,
yeah, that's true.
If I spent $500 and this thing is balanced perfectly, I can use it with, you know, just light finger control. It sharpens up nicely. I mean, that's another thing I hate about modern factory knives, is there's in the U.S., there has been this conversion to, let's make these things out of the hardest steels that we can.
Yeah, I know. A lot of them are real hard steel.
And there is some benefit to that, because it means it holds its edge a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get a good quality edge for a long period of time while you're using it. However, what happens is you wind up, when you try to sharpen it, you wind up sitting there for 45 minutes trying to get even a median edge back on it.
Yeah, they're hard to sharpen, that's for sure. Yeah. I mean, one of my little folders, my little SOG Vulcan, has Japanese VG10 steel, and that's fairly hard.
Yeah, the VG10 is pretty hard, and it's, I mean, SOG makes great, you know, I've got a SOG. The thing I don't like about at least the SOG I have is I don't like their blade geometry. I don't like the designs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, personally, I carry a Buck Bantam that I spent $20 on.
You know, 20, really? Okay.
Yeah, $20-$25 on it. It's a Buck. It's a made in Taiwan knife, or the blade is made in Taiwan.
Well, that's okay. I mean, sometimes you can get some good stuff coming out of there.
Oh yeah, no, this is a great knife. I've had it for probably about 5-6 years, and it's my everyday carry for, you know, it's got the one-handed opening, which I love. I love that tactical folder opening. You know, it's so handy. But I carry 4 knives on an average day.
No kidding.
Yeah, I carry my Buck. And that's my big boy. That's, you know, it's got about a 3-3.5 inch blade on it. That's my big boy for heavy chores.
Mm-hmm.
But I've carried a Swiss Army knife every day pretty much since I was a sophomore in high school. And that was 20 plus years ago that I started carrying. And I carried it all through high school. And, you know, I was in high school back in the 80s when they were first starting to crack down on things like that. And oddly enough, the principal actually knew I carried it.
Yeah, and he didn't do anything, huh?
No, he was one of these intelligent people. He knew I was a good kid. He knew I didn't take it out and vandalize the school. He knew I didn't take it out and threaten people with it.
You mean he was using a little bit of common sense?
Yes.
Wow, isn't that amazing? Someone in the education field, I better be careful. I better be careful. You know,
I got
because
a lot
of all
who are teachers.
Yeah, well, my sister's a teacher, so
yeah.
I'm going to be careful. But I think everybody knows what I mean. There are some very, very good common sense people in the education field. There are also a lot of people who are strictly acting on emotion and they're leaving common sense in the gutter.
Well, you know, it's like everybody goes for these, you know, gun-free zones and weapon-free zones, and I kind of look at it and I go, well, okay, fine. I'm going to use the argument that the knives in my pocket are tools and not weapons, but, you know, the Second Amendment guarantees my right to carry a knife anywhere I damn well choose, and, you know, that's kind of my opinion on it.
Yeah, because knives are actually arms.
Knives can be used as arms.
Well, sure, they're used as arms, and then we have the right to keep and bear arms. So, yeah, that would fit. You're right. That would fit. Well, Matt, I think this is a good stopping point, and you've shared a wealth of information. Thanks for everything you've talked about on hand tools and what to stock, and especially on knife sharpening, too. Man, I mean, this has been great, great information on knife sharpening. I appreciate you doing this.
Oh, you're very welcome. I mean, people always ask, and this is kind of one little finish-up thing here, Bob, is people go, what's the best survival knife? Because they look at all those. I mean, you can get a knife catalog, you can see 100,000 knives.
Oh, real quickly, tell us what's the best survival knife.
The one you got on you.
I knew you were going to say that. That's just like everybody asks, what's the best gun?
The one you have.
When you need it.
Yeah, it's, you know, the best survival knife is the one you carry. If you like a knife, I urge people, you know, my brother-in-law loves knives. He collects them and stuff, but he doesn't like to carry.
Mm-hmm.
And I just look at him and I go, dude, carry every day.
Exactly.
I mean, I told you, I carry four knives. I've got my buck for big jobs. I've got a Swiss Army knife. I've got a little Stockman for little jobs. And for, you know, I like sometimes to sit down and whittle or carve something. And
sure.
Then I carry a Leatherman Wave. It rides on my hip every day. You know, there is not a day that goes by that I'm not pulling one of those knives out to use it for something.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, thanks for sharing with us on your opinion on the survival knife. And once again, I appreciate you coming on the show. Folks, this was Matt Chusnik. And he's a regular listener. He listens to both of my shows. And I got a feeling that we might be seeing you a little bit more on the forum, huh?
I definitely am going to get a little more time on the forum. I've just been a little busy this month
so far.
Okay.
And that's okay. good luck with your venture there on selling some of your blacksmithing. That's great.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to that. I'm hoping it goes real well and it becomes a continuing thing, because boy, it would be real nice to be able to make a little bit of money that way.
Absolutely.
But you know, I think we could probably do a more in-depth show if you want to sometime on knife sharpening, and go over all the fine points, and because I know we just brushed on a lot of stuff.
We will do this as a part two. And before I let you go, I just want to tell you, I'll be coming to Austin in the near future, and we'll do a good barter. I'll give you a copy of the CD, and I got a few blades I'm going to hand you. How's that?
That sounds real good. We can work out the details, either email or give me a call, Bob, and we'll get you taken care of.
Matt Chusnik, first of all, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for coming on, and you have yourself a terrific day, okay?
Well, you've made my day here, Bob, because I've been listening, and I did not comment on anything until I had actually listened to all of your shows.
Well, thank you.
I have been a fan of your show. I found it, and I started back. I downloaded everything. I started back at the very first one and worked my way up, and I'm now, for probably the last month or so, or 2 months, I've been current on your stuff. You release a new one, I listen to it. So
you got to be sick of hearing me now.
No, actually, I pop it into the I get into the car and I pop it on, and I'm like, let's hear what Bob has to say today. I really enjoy because Bob, you come at it from a common sense point of view. You're not saying, you know, you're doing us all this great service by doing this show. And you come at it from this point of view of, let's be sensible, let's be reasonable. And you don't go to the tinfoil hat end of things all that often. I mean, there's a couple of times you've had some stuff, and I didn't necessarily always buy into it, but at least
that's
it was there to be thought about.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want everybody to agree with everything I say. That's not good.
Well, yeah, it doesn't make for entertaining conversations anyway. But you
right.
know, but you come at it from a common sense. I mean, where else do we hear in a podcast how to deal with difficult people?
Uh huh. I like to talk about that.
You know, where else does a podcast? You know, I mean, you've had some great podcasts on storing water and things mm-hmm. like that, and or basic fitness and first aid and all mm-hmm. of those things. And it's hard to find that on the other shows.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I listen to some of the other shows, and some of them are great, and some of them I just stop listening to because they go on and on, and it's, you know, get your AR-15, get your, you know, 10 million rounds of ammunition, get your 16 years of MREs, load it up into your car, drive off 80 miles into the woods, build your bug out base.
Right.
Isolate yourself from everybody else in the world.
Which is not a good idea.
Well, exactly. I mean, there you go. There's another one. How to build a network of people.
I've talked about that a lot too.
You know, and I think that's fantastic. And I've been meaning to get on there and say, because there have been a couple of times, as I told you, I've been out of work, you know, unemployed for the last 2 years. I haven't had a real job. I've been doing things here and there, and you know, through the help of family and through the help of the unemployment and stuff, I've managed to make it this far. And
good for you.
You know, we're trying to keep our preps up and do that thing. And my wife loves having extra stores of food. I mean, we go to the grocery store once a week, and I'm stocking things back in.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thanks for being so complimentary, Matt. And you've done a great job on this show. And I definitely want to have you back on for a part two. We can get more in depth on the knife sharpening issue. How's that?
That sounds great. I mean, I'd love to do a show that's just straight up about knives and knife sharpening. That sounds.
We'll do
really
that.
Good
we'll plan
me.
That. Watch your email inbox. I will be sending you an invitation for that, and then also be sending you an invitation when I get down to the Austin area.
That sounds great, Bob. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Matt. Have a great day.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. Is that good information or what? I hope you enjoyed that. I was taking copious notes while he was talking. So, hey, Matt, thanks again for coming on the show. I want to close with this, ladies and gentlemen. There's a lot more to that interview. Right after we finished up for the subject matter for this show, we talked about health, we talked about food storage, we talked about living gluten-free, because I have celiac disease, and so does Matt and his family. And so we talk about a lot of things that will help you from your food storage and healthy eating. As you know, I'm a big proponent of fitness. I'm a big proponent of healthy eating and stuff like that. I think those are all survival preps that often get neglected. And we don't neglect that stuff. So the rest of it goes on for quite a bit longer. The rest of that interview is going to be on version 2 of my upcoming CD and digital download that's going to release on March 15th. So, stay tuned for that, and there's going to be some real good information. We get off of this subject of the knife sharpening and the blacksmithing and the hand tools and stuff, and we just get into some other really good general preparedness info. So I hope that you'll take advantage of that. Once again, a big shout out to Matt. Thank you so much. And my name is Bob Main. I'm your host, although today Matt did most of the talking. But I'm your general host of today's Survival Show, where it's my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms. Teddy Roosevelt said, do what you can with what you have wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in, folks. I'll catch you next time.